Now, this morning, I want to talk to you about the Solomon is regretting life's disappointments. Chapter 6 chronicles some disappointments in life, and he's regretting life's disappointments. Now, I have a parenthetical title to this that I'll talk about probably at the close. I want to ask you, are you a rolling stone? Now, when I first typed that in, I told someone yesterday that I actually typed it in, are you rolling stoned? But that was incorrect. Are you a rolling stone? I'll tell you what that means in a moment. But let's get to the text. First of all, chapter 12 and verse 13, this is at the end. You know, sometimes preachers will preach from a text. Sometimes they will preach towards a text. I believe Ecclesiastes, Solomon is preaching towards a text. He's giving testimony of many things that took place in his life or things that he observed. But when he comes to the summation, when he draws the conclusion of what he'd learned during his time living apart from God, he determined that this verse says it all. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. And so that was the, regardless of the path he took and the journey, you know, the thirst he had for this or that, he came around, he came to the conclusion that a life apart from God was simply not a life worth living. The whole duty of man was to fear the Lord, that is to worship or reverence, respect him, and then obey him. So that's the direction, you know, because if you get tied down in a lot of these verses, you know, you think, well, where is he going with this? That's where he's going. He's trying to give personal testimony, but then he concludes, hey, that's not where happiness is found. Happiness is knowing God. So let's look now at chapter 6, and I want to do something that I did last week. I want to read, if you'd allow me, from one of the modern translations, and then we'll come back, as is our custom, and expound the text from the King James, all right? So this is from the New Living Translation, and because Solomon writes in allegory, it's just a little bit easier, I guess, to grasp. It reads a little easier, so I hope you'll appreciate that. There is another serious tragedy, he says, I have seen under the sun, and it weighs heavily on humanity. God gives some people great wealth and honor and everything they could ever want, but then he doesn't give them a chance to enjoy these things. They die, and someone else, even a stranger, ends up enjoying their wealth. This is meaningless, a sickening tragedy. A man might have 100 children and live to be very old. But if he finds no satisfaction in life and doesn't even get a decent burial, it would have been better for him to be born dead. His birth would have been meaningless. He would have ended in darkness. He wouldn't even have had a name, and he would have never seen the sun or known of its existence. Yet he would have had more peace than in growing up to be an unhappy man. He might live 1,000 years twice over, but still not find contentment. And since he must die like everyone else, well, what's the use? All people spend their lives scratching for food, but they never seem to have enough. So are the wise people really better off than the fools? Do poor people gain anything by being wise and knowing how to act in front of others? Enjoy what you have rather than desiring what you don't have. Just dreaming about nice things is meaningless, like chasing the wind. Everything has already been decided. It was known long ago what each person would be. So there's no use arguing with God about your destiny. The more words you speak, the less they mean. So what good are they? In the few days of our meaningless lives, who knows how our days can best be spent? Our lives are like a shadow. Who can tell what will happen on this earth after we're gone? Would you bow as we ask the Lord to help us this morning? Father, I need you to help me now to speak, Lord, with passion and clarity, the wonderful word of God one more time. I pray, Father, that you would open up your word to our hearts and our hearts to your word and help us receive instruction from you that can only be efficacious in our life when it is as if it comes from you. So I pray you'd add your blessings to the reading of your word. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, I want from this text to give you three thoughts, and I'm going to go ahead and tell you what they are before we get started. I believe Solomon is picturing three different kinds of people. He first of all tells us about the unfulfilled life of a rich man, the unsatisfied soul of a poor man, and the unanswered questions of a confused man. The unfulfilled life of a rich man, first of all. Now, in chapter 6, verse 1, he's talking about joy and how it comes or where it doesn't come from. And he says, first of all, joy is not the product of fortune. And we've heard this all our lives. You know, that your money doesn't make you happy or material things don't make you happy. Well, Solomon certainly attests to that, and he had more wealth than anyone in the known world at that time. But he concluded that joy does not come with fortune or money. Notice again, reading the King James now, he says, "There's a man to whom God hath given riches, wealth, and honor, so that he wanteth nothing for his soul, so he wanteth nothing for his soul and all that he desireth. Yet God hath given him, yet God hath given him not power to eat thereof." Now the New International says something, God doesn't allow him to enjoy it. In other words, here's a person that has amassed a great fortune. And with that fortune, he's got great notoriety. He has honor. And there's nothing that he wants that he cannot purchase and buy. He has access to all things imaginable. But because God is his creator, God has not allowed this very same person to enjoy the things that he has. Here is a rich man who has an unfulfilled life because God will not allow him to believe that fortune and joy go together. The creator won't allow it. The most miserable people, some of the most miserable people in the world, we are told, they have plenty that this world has to offer, but they're very unhappy. You know, you can't buy happiness. You can't buy peace of mind. Where are you going to buy it? Where are you going to get it? If you go shopping today for peace of mind, where are you going to go and purchase that? Where are you going to go buy a good night's sleep? You say, well, you can get the finest mattress, but it doesn't guarantee you'll rest. Where do you get real joy from? Solomon says, I've seen God intervene in the lives of the rich and the famous and absolutely does not allow them to enjoy those things they've accumulated. Joy does not come with fortune. The second thing that Solomon points out in the life of the unfulfilled rich man is that joy can be stolen by foreigners. What do you mean? Well, notice the text, it says this, but a stranger will come and eat it. Here's a man or a woman, a family that has amassed great wealth. With that wealth, they've got, as I said, notoriety, they've got some fame, they've got recognition, people know who they are. But inside the walls of this house, there's great sadness and sorrow. And because you have to sometimes burn the candle at both ends to accumulate that kind of wealth, here's what happens when a person gets ready to leave this world. He leaves it with people that haven't worked for it at all. And sometimes even he says a stranger. Now, the word stranger actually could be translated foreigner. In other words, someone else can confiscate what this wealthy person has. I mean, I know in my own family there was a I had an uncle who was very prudent, very frugal, and he made good money all of his life, and he was really a gentleman, a distinguished man, and as it was his wife, and they had amassed a great deal of wealth. And he left it to my cousin, his only child. There was a house paid for, there was a couple of cars paid for, there was a boat paid for, and there was $500,000 in cash. And it was all left to my cousin. Well, the problem is, and you'd have to know and appreciate my uncle to understand, his yard was always just pristine. It was just his house, everything was in order. He just, the way he carried himself, it was just really, he was a unique individual, a very quiet man. But he dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's and lived an honorable life. But when his son got a hold of his fortune, within 2 years' time, every dime was spent. I rode by the house, and it was paints peeling on it, and the yard's overgrown, and the tires were flat on the car, one of the vehicles that he left. And it was just the picture of someone else doing what Solomon said, eating it, getting it, and like an evil disease, it's destroyed. My cousin had a cocaine habit. And that cocaine, of course, is a very expensive habit to have. And he went through all of those possessions that he'd worked so hard for so long. And Solomon said, I've noticed this. Sometimes strange things can happen to what you are protecting so well in this life. Things you value so much. You guard your wealth and you work for it and you protect. He says, but I'm telling you, if that's what you're believing is going to give you peace of mind or going to give you joy, God's not going to allow it to have that effect on you. And you better watch out because foreigners may eat it up. Now, there's another application that we could make. I think the foreigner sometimes can come from those things that make us, we don't realize just how blessed we are. For example, whatever you have, whatever you drove here today, wherever you live, the food you'll eat later, the many blessings that we have just living in this country. But sometimes when unbelief, because of circumstances in our life, and we believe things are a lot worse than they are, that's like a foreigner eating away at the joy. Things can steal your joy. You can have such a love for things or spend so much energy on maintaining things that you don't have time to be connected with the one who is above the sun. People can drain you. Difficult people in your life that place pressure or demands on you can take you out of focus, and you can't enjoy what you have because the foreigners have, like an evil disease, gnawed away at the good things in your life, or it appears that way. Worry. Some people are just plagued with chronic worry. They're always anxious, always stressed. And because of that, you look at them, and if you ever visit a third world country, you would be so ashamed that you're stressed as you are. I remember when I had the opportunity to go to Egypt, and we were in between Israel and Egypt, and we went in, we were going through the desert, and I met this little girl from a little tribe, the Bedouin tribe, I think it's called. You can pull it up on the internet and look at it. But these little children have nothing, literally nothing, and they live inside the rocks with their families. I had some candy on the bus, and I went and I gave the little girl and some of her brothers and sisters some candy and tried to talk with them. And of course, they didn't know English, and I didn't know their language. But I can't describe the level of poverty that they were enduring. But I'll never forget, I can still see as I was handing her the candy, the big smile, just this beautiful smile on her face. So glad to get it. You'd think she could enjoy that candy because that's all she had. And then some of the older kids came over and tried to get it, and I saw her hide it under. And I bought a little bracelet from her, and I wore it for a little while just where I could think about her and pray for her. This little girl's probably 9, 10 years old. But it was just a heartbreaking thing. But to see how appreciative she was and they were of the smallest things. And yet today, most of us will eat whatever we want. Some of us will eat depressed, angry, sad. Foreigners eating away at the joy that could be in our life if we were connected rightly to the one who is above the sun. Our enemies, you know. People that don't like you, people that say things about you, that mistreat you or misrepresent you or undermine you, that's a hurtful thing. It's a painful thing. They are like foreigners that can steal your joy. Sickness in your body. Your body's been attacked by some terrible disease. And so for whatever reason, there's weakness. And so because of that, that is kind of an excuse for you to not have joy. And I'll say excuse, but I really believe that there is a place we can get to with He who is above the sun that can literally elevate us from a lot of the things in this life that cause us great distress. Jonathan Edwards, one of the greatest preachers of many years ago, he said, "I want to live so close to God that I'm out of reach over what circumstances or what my enemies or what anything can do to steal my joy." Didn't the Bible say greater is He that's in us than he that's in the world? Family conflicts. All of these things attack the joy in our life, and we're unable to stop and smell the roses. You've been there, so have I. I'm sad to say that there are times when I can wake up and I just had this undefined sadness. I wish I could tell you. I heard Adrian Rogers, one of my favorite preachers, someone who I revere, I respect at the absolute highest degree, and he's in heaven now. But he said he'd never been depressed a day in his life. And when he said that, I was in the service, and I remember sitting there, and tears just streamed down my cheek, and I said, "God, you know I can't say that. There's no way I could say that." Some of it may have to do with personality, and some of it may have to do with my lack of faith or trust, but I'm going to stand in front of you and tell you the truth. And the truth is, some days I feel assaulted by sadness. And it's profound, and it lingers, and it's a warfare to get that off my back. And that comes from that foreigner, you know, the unfulfilled life. Not that we're rich or anything. I'm rich, and I don't think there's anybody here rich, but you understand, people that have all that they need and everything, but yet still it's not right. And I think this happens to us when we try to get joy from people, places, or things. When we try to get that fulfilled life from anything outside of the one who's above the sun. I really do. I believe that the one who is above the sun is the only thing that can satisfy that deep down soul thirst. So there's the unfulfilled life of the rich man. And I got to pick up the pace here. But he talks about joy can be stolen. He talks about some people are not allowed to enjoy it. But then he says, this is interesting. Joy is not tied to family life. Some people are under the illusion that family life guarantees joy. If you have a family, you know, you're going to have a lot of joy. Not necessarily. He gives us a picture of this man. He says he could have 100 children. Now, when I read that, and I read it, and what I do is my custom, I usually read in numerous translations, and I was reading that, and I was looking at this one, looking at that one, and I thought to myself, now, come on, Solomon, I know you're really trying to drive a point here, but 100 children? He said, but if a man begat 100 children, but here's a person, he's got wealth, he's got honor, and he's got this big family. But, you know, joy doesn't come from having, joy does not come from having kids. Can I go on record? I'll sign that in blood. But I've had people tell me, there's one couple, their marriage was just absolutely on the rocks. It wasn't going to make it. And they says, they want to have another kid. Or the lady, I said, you're kidding. She said, I just feel like if we have another kid, things would be better. I'm thinking, what are you smoking, lady? I mean, no, not going to work. I know people say, boy, if I could just get married. Excuse me. I had a man tell me, he said, I'm done with marriage. I'll never get married. I said, what's the problem? He said, well, love, it's a dream. Marriage is an alarm clock. It didn't work. But they said, you know, family life, well, that'll make me happy. Joy is not tied to family life. It's not tied to fortune. It can be stolen by foreigners. He even illustrates this. You can almost see, you know, and we know, I pointed out earlier where Solomon despaired life. He actually sunk into depression. And he says in one place, he says, you know, I hated life. You know, I showed you that in an earlier sermon. And you can see this fatalistic attitude, this negativity building in his life, because he's going to illustrate now with a person or a woman who miscarries. She has a stillborn. And let's look at the next verse here. I say that an untimely birth is better than he, better than this man that has 100 kids. An untimely birth, that's a stillbirth or a miscarriage. He pictured a child or a mother carrying a child, but yet she loses this child because it's, you know, far too premature. It doesn't make it for whatever reason. And he said, that person's better off than that rich man over there with all of that wealth and all of those kids and all of those things, but yet he's miserable. Now, how can Solomon justify a statement like that? Well, he explains. Next verse. I think I have it. This is the child now. He says, he comes in with vanity. In other words, with emptiness. He departs in darkness. His name's covered with darkness. Moreover, he hath not seen the sun nor known anything. This hath more rest than the other. He says, in other words, this little child that he never got a name because he's never born. He never saw the sun. The mama didn't really know the child. The child didn't know the mama. And so he said, look, that child is at rest. That child has been delivered from whatever atrocities that this life may afford. And so he says, that child's better off than that rich man that has wealth, has honor, has power, has 100 kids, big family, but he's miserable. That stillborn baby is in better shape than he is. That's how serious he drives home the point of a person that lives life drawing all of their happiness from the world around them. He said, I'm telling you, I've been there. You know, you and I, we've been studying this together, and he tried every road he could to find happiness and pleasure. Everything was a dead end. Everything was like chasing the wind. Everything was vanity. Everything vexed his spirit or left him exasperated. And so now he's just really getting down to the nitty gritty. And he says, look, I'll tell you about these rich people. I've been rich, he says. And you don't get joy that way. And we know he had a big family, but he said it did not yield any joy. The unfulfilled life of a rich man. Why is it unfulfilled? Because he's rich? No, Job was rich. Abraham was rich. David was rich. Solomon was rich. Nothing wrong with being rich if that's God's providence for you. But it's when we try to tie our happiness to the things that we have. Doesn't work. God won't let you enjoy it. Let me ask you a question. Are you enjoying what you have? When's the last time you walked in your house and said, thank God for this house? Lord, I just think, I'm not worthy of a house like this. Thank you for this house. When's the last time you got in your vehicle and you said, you know, Lord, this is such a blessing. You know, thank you for this. I mean, are you, you know, do you worship God for the blessing? I mean, are you enjoying what you have? You say, well, no, what I have is a ball and chain. Well, maybe it's because God has intervened and not allowed you the enjoyment of it because you have misplaced priorities. Solomon talks about that. Let's move on quickly. The unsatisfied soul of a poor man. You see, Solomon just covers all the bases. He says, now don't you get the idea that now you, what you really need to do is go into an ascetic life, join a monastery, get really, really poor, because happiness doesn't come from poverty either. The unsatisfied poor man. Notice he talks about him in verse 6, he says, verse 7. He says, you can experience labor without reward. And that's difficult for people that are just in the daily grind and all of, you know, they just make enough to feed their family. All the labor of a man is for his mouth, and yet the appetite is not filled. Now, that word appetite there is nephesh, and it actually is the same word sometimes translated soul. It comes from the deepest part of a person, their passions, their longings, their cravings, their likes, their dislikes. And so he says, you know, a man here is working hard, and he's working just to feed his family, or she's working to feed her family or whatever. And he says, but it's not hitting on what's needed. It's not. The appetite, the soul, is still empty. There's no real reward in it. Labor, the word is effort. There's a lot of effort being put there, but there's little reward. It's called the daily grind, the monotonous life. Secondly, moving on a little quicker, you can attain wisdom and not have any success. You know, I used to believe that everybody that had gray hair was wise. Because I read in the Bible that the gray hair would be a crown of righteousness. But the rest of the verse says, to those that walk in it. And when I went to the nursing home and got cussed out by a lot of gray-haired people, I found out that's not necessarily the way it works. And I'm not kidding. Oh, boy, you are one mean. But, you know, anyway. I don't tell you everything, I think. But people gain experience, wisdom, but it doesn't guarantee that you're going to be a successful person, because I think there are a lot of people that are very, very wise that don't have much of this world's goods. My grandmother was one such person. My grandmother never owned her own home. She was very, very poor, but she was the most contented person I'd ever known. And she had wisdom because she knew where joy came from. It was from the one who's above the sun. You can have dreams and not have results. Well, let's look at the verse. I'm sorry. For what hath the wise man more than the fool? What hath the poor that knoweth to walk before the living? And that's a little convoluted, but what he's actually saying, he says, you know, the wise and the fool, both of them do without at times. And the poor, just because they have learned to walk in front of the living and not appear poor, are, you know, they keep their dignity and their self-respect, but yet still they're empty on the inside, just like the rich. People have dreams but have no results. Notice what he says. You know, we all have dreams. We have visions, things. Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the desire. It's also vanity and vexation of spirit. What is he saying? He's saying, you know, it's better if you, you know, we'd say a bird in the hand's worth two in a bush. Chuck Swindoll says it this way in his book, Living on the Ragged Edge, which is a wonderful exposition of this book of Ecclesiastes. He said, I'd rather have a hamburger and a fries today than to spend all night dreaming about steak and lobster. And so he's saying some people are always dreaming, always believing that something's better around the corner, around the bend. He says, but you know, just stop right now and realize, you know, what's in your hand. Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire. Always looking for greener grass. You see, the unsatisfied poor man. Finally, let me close with the unanswered questions of a confused man. Now, I don't have time to deal with all of this, but in verses 6, 8, 11, and 12, I think there's a total of 6 questions that Solomon asked. And the questions are very provocative, and I don't know that there are answers to them, and I think that's why he asked them. But when you have unanswered questions and life is throwing you such a curveball and you're absolutely confused, a couple of things to remember real quickly. Number one, God is God. That which has been is named already, and it is known that it is man. In other words, God knows what's in man. For example, God has already made a lot of decisions you're worried about. Okay? He's on the throne, and he's a sovereign God, and he's already made a whole lot of decisions that you are worried about today. God knows, the Bible said, your down sittings and your uprisings. He knows your thoughts afar off. He knows the way that you take. He knows your path. He knows your life. He knows everything about you. And a lot of things, he's already made those decisions, so why don't you just sit back and enjoy the ride, is what he's saying. God is God. And he doesn't answer all your questions. Could you imagine that if God answered all our questions? It's foolish to think that we could comprehend the mind of God. So, unanswered questions, trust the fact that God is God. Look in the New Living says this about that verse. Everything's already been decided. It was known long ago what each person would be. You look like you look because, yeah, there's a genetic makeup with your mom and dad and all of that stuff, but still, that was God. He's the creator. He created that DNA and that genetic map that you have. That's why Jesus said, which one of you taking one thought could add one inch to your height? You know, how could you, you know, worry about what you look like here. Look, God's already, he's in control. He's God, everything in your life. The second thing, you're human. You say, well, I know that. Well, act like it. Because you're human, what makes you think you deserve all the answers? Notice what he says. That which hath been is named already, and it is known that it is man. In other words, it is known what is in man. And what man is on his best day is human and frail. So, unanswered questions, I just step back and say, you know, God, you're the one on the throne, and I'm the one on the footstool. Help me live at your feet. You're God. I'm human. Third thing, final thing. You can't whip him. Look at verse 10. I love this. Neither may he contend with him that is mightier than he. Now, you can throw your fist up at him and you can complain about all the injustices that you think have come your way. But the fact is, you can't contend with God. God is God, and you are human, and you can't whip him. So trust him. Now, I told you I was going to ask you a question. And that question is, are you a rolling stone? 1965, there was four guys lived across the pond, and they put together a group. I think it's 62 their group formed, but in 1965, they introduced to the world the song "Can't Get No Satisfaction," the Rolling Stones. And I was looking at the words of that song. This is the song. Can't get no satisfaction. I can't get no satisfaction because I try and I try and I try and I try. I can't get no satisfaction. Did you know that this is one of the most played songs in terms of the rock and roll genre of all time? Since 1989, now the song was released in 65. Since 1989, the Rolling Stones have made $1.5 billion. And they still tour, put together a tour from time to time. Their most requested song today is "I Can't Get No Satisfaction." You know, Solomon could have joined that band. And sadly, I think a lot of times you and I could too. I try, I try, I try. Why? Well, don't you think it could be because somehow we lost a connection to the one that's above the sun? Instead of, like Solomon, living under the sun. Solomon's regretting life's disappointments. And I think we all do. Disappointments aren't fun. But the question, I guess, is this, you know, can God encourage our hearts when we're disappointed? Answer, yes. Well, then it would be the whole duty of man to allow that, wouldn't it? Let's pray. As we wait before the Lord this morning, God puts moments together for His own purpose. If you need to talk to the Lord about anything in your life, then I've always said this, the time to do it is when God is speaking, you know, and He's impressing upon your heart. When He dials your number and you answer the phone, it's just a lot easier to get in touch with Him. So that's what this moment's all about, is giving you that opportunity to find a place to kneel and pray and speak to the Lord about whatever may be taking place in your life that you need His help with. Father, help me. Help those that are here. Help each one of us. Do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Share Your strength.